of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
dope. It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome to another edition of the Computer Corners. Computer Corners? I guess there's more than one corner in this here building, and we're going to call it the Computer Corners this week. Ken Colburn here, your data doctor's du jour. Actually, one of many. Rich Holm joining us from our location in Wayzata, which is a suburb of the Minneapolis market. Yeah?
Yep.
You're real close to that lake they call Minnetonka, right?
Oh, yeah. 2 blocks.
Yeah. Come on up to the mic there so the folks, fine folks, can hear you.
All right, two blocks away.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it. It's gorgeous. In fact, with it being 100 and whatever, just bazillion degrees, the pizza oven is in effect here in Phoenix, and I'm thinking, might have to make another road trip to Minneapolis. It was good out there. Also joining us is the head of the Data Recovery and Forensics Department of Data Doctors for the entire organization worldwide. Clayton Moline is going to join us on the show this week, so that those of you that have a... We have a very unique opportunity here. If you have a forensic situation in your life, a legal issue, anything that would require computer forensics, it's almost like Data Doctors CSI. or you're one of the many that has lost data, you know, on a camera card. I mean, it's amazing how many times I'll be talking to somebody anywhere in the world, get to talking. And somewhere along the line, we get into a discussion about the fact that we're in the data retrieval, data recovery business. And without fail, there's always something that's in a closet somewhere. Yeah, sure wish I knew you 2 years ago or 6 months ago or whatever, because I have this hard drive and it's got all these family pictures and nobody can get it off. And we're like, no time like the present. We can still help you.
Absolutely.
The point being, we know y'all have a lot of stuff out there where there's stuff stored on old hard drives, on cards, on whatever, or you're in the process of dealing with a situation now. We have a very unique opportunity because the very top of the data recovery and forensics lab is actually the smartest guy in our company when it comes to data recovery and direct data forensics is in the house joining us this week as well. So
glad to be here.
So, premise of the show, if you're a first-time listener, and if you are, where you been? I mean, we've been doing the show for over a decade here and waiting for you, and actually we're glad you're here. If you're listening online, you can call in, you can email, you can do everything that the folks here local can do. And if you are listening outside of the Phoenix area and you do want to chime in, please let us know that you're listening outside. We got our buddy in Glasgow, Scotland, sent us an email last week saying, hey, I'm still here and I got a question. And that's what we're here for. We're here to answer technology questions, try to help you navigate this wild world of technology. You know, it's not just computers anymore, right? It's everything. Anything with a power button these days, we tend to get questions on. So we will do our very best to help you. You can call us at 602-277-5827. That's 602-277-KTAR. You can join us online at datadoctors.com/radio, which will take you to today's page, which has today's topic and theme, today's Geek Speak, and a place for you to ask a question or submit just general comments, like, you know, who cuts your hair or whatever comments might be at the top of your mind. We're bringing in tow a theme this week that's a little off the break-fix kind of mentality where here's a problem, here's a solution. It's really more of a general discussion about the world of hackers. And we thought if we talked to you in terms of the perspective of the world from a hacker's keyboard, it might help you understand how and why they attack you, and more importantly, the behavior that you might engage in now, not knowing these things, that might change as a result of saying, oh, that's why they're doing that, and oh, that's why it's important I don't click on that link, and oh, that's why it's important I don't open that email. So we're going to try to dig into the mentality, the mindset of the hacker, and kind of go over the whole hacking world from the early stages to what it is today, because it has evolved quite a bit. Anybody out there that fancies themselves a hacker, whether you're a white hat hacker, a black hat hacker, gray hat hacker, or if you just like
There's
red
lots,
hat.
Lots of colors.
Linux red hat. No, I don't red hat. If you're out there and you've been one of these guys that fancies themselves a hacker, a cracker, a sneaker, any of those, whatever term you want to use, you love playing with this stuff in ways that the average person doesn't, feel free to call in, chime in also. That's the whole point of this thing, is to kind of expose that world, that mindset. I mean, just so everyone realizes, this is not some, you know, group of 15-year-olds out there. I mean, there was a time when there was a lot of those, what they call script kiddies out there. There are annual conventions for hackers. It's called DEF CON, and it gathers in Las Vegas every year. It is a huge event, and there are a lot of people that show up. And it's not a thing of, let's get together and figure out how to break into the Pentagon. And I mean, it's nothing like that. So I think this discussion, we were hoping to get folks to understand a little bit more about the mentality, that it's not a black and white thing, and that there are people out there that would be considered hackers that are actually doing things on your behalf. They're actually helping you by exposing some of the situations. Now, some of them do it in a way that's, you know, reasonably understandable by the average consumer. And then there's some people out there that believe that they're doing what's right for humanity, but they're doing it in a way that most people kind of scratch their head and go, what are you thinking?
Yep.
All those questions you have every time we talk about the whole hacker virus mentality, like, why do they do it? You know, why can't we arrest these people? Why, you know, all those things. We're going to talk about that today, so you have a better understanding all about that. Now, the phone lines are full, but if you're new to the show, jot this down, 602-277-5827. That's how you get in. Obviously, you want to wait until somebody hangs up. We apologize that we can't get to calls right away and quickly and all those things, because we do have to conform to the format on the radio station, which requires us to take breaks from time to time, which allows us to take a little caffeine in, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're good to go. So, Rich, now, you as we were walking up and we have this nice warm weather out here, you said the high today in Minneapolis is slated to be
57 degrees.
57 degrees.
Yes, and it's nice and chilly up there.
I should have had you bring some of that in your suitcase, huh?
I wish I could have. I spoke with my wife earlier. She was at the farmer's market, and she said she wished she would have wore a jacket. It was cold and windy.
I was just in New York last week, and it was drizzly rainy pretty much the whole time. And then I was like, I can't wait to get home to sunny Arizona. And I got here, and it's like somebody turned the oven on while I was gone. But it happened.
Big change. Big change.
John, Bob, Cameron, Mike, you're all in the queue there. We are going to get to your questions. And, of course, if you have any other questions besides what you're going to hear on this show, join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. Check out the theme of the show, which is basically getting into the world of hacking and understanding the hackers and learning from that so that you can protect yourself. And any of you that are concerned about, have I been hacked? Because that's a very common question you get, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
I mean, Rich,
you get
that up in Minneapolis, right?
Yes, absolutely. How secure is it?
Well, or this thing is popping up. Does that mean somebody just hacked my machine? It's a very common, you know, it's like the general description of my computer crashed. Well, what's that mean? So we're going to dig into some of those things. We're going to give you some of the terminology in the hacker world so you can sound really smart next time you're at a cocktail party or something. So one way or the other, we're hoping to get you a little information. We call it edutainment. We're going to have a little fun. We're going to give you a little education, and we're going to talk more and more about the world of hackers. Stay tuned for more. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're actually glad to be in air conditioning, wouldn't you say, Clay?
Absolutely. It's much nicer in here than
And I'm sure, Rich, you're very happy to be.
Yeah. I'm very happy to be inside.
So we're talking about hackers and the hacker world so that you can get a better feel for why they do what they do. And more importantly, arm yourself with knowledge. So the problem with us giving you specific tactical ways to deal with hackers today is that they'll come up with a new way tomorrow. So we'll do that. And that's what our newsletters are for. That's what our Twitter feed is for. By the way, all you in the Twitter sphere, if you want to interface with us via Twitter, my account on Twitter is the Data Doc, no spaces, the Data Doc. So if you want to send a question in via Twitter, we're monitoring that as well. The thing I love about Twitter is they have to articulate the question in 140 characters.
They don't have many words to say.
No long-winded questions on Twitter. So. Anyway, so that's the point of the show, is to try to get you to understand how they think so that 6 months from now you still have tactical ways to deal with this, and you're going to understand why you shouldn't do certain things, and you're going to be able to articulate to your children or anyone else that, you know, in your company, whatever it is, whoever you're responsible for when it comes to your computer. So that's the point of today's theme. But before we get into that, we're going to go to the phones here and see if we can't clear a few calls. John!
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good. You're pretty certain you've contracted a virus of some sort.
I believe so. I was on Facebook, and I had one of those Windows virus alerts come up.
Okay. Now, let me stop you there.
Okay.
Were you absolutely certain that the alert came from the software that you installed to protect you? In other words, if you installed a Norton antivirus, it was a Norton thing. What do you have for antivirus?
It's a MaxiShield.
Okay. Was that who you got the warning from?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
I have that one. That's what told me that the virus was there and that it was catching it.
Got it. Okay. All right, continue.
Okay, and then right after that happened, I basically shut down my computer because I let that quarantine it, and I shut the computer down, went to restart it, and now my modem is not working on my computer.
Okay, so that's two issues. The virus. Let me make sure. You said that this was one of these that it looked like a friend of yours sent a thing to go see this video or something through Facebook, right?
Right, it had their picture on it and said, "This is my latest video," and then when you open it up, it shows Windows virus alert.
Right. They're just trying to get you to click on enough things to infect your machine.
Correct.
They refer to this virus as the Koob face, K-O-O-B face virus.
Okay.
It's Facebook backwards, but except it's face, second word.
Gotcha.
And then Koob backwards. I mean, it's like, whatever. And the whole point of this, and we've talked about this on the various news segments that I've done on this, the CNN segment that I do, they're using online video to trick people. And the most clever one that I've seen, you'll get an email, is like, "I can't believe this video of you is up on YouTube, and how can you let this happen?" kind of thing, where they're trying to freak you out, where you're going to click through and go, "Whoa, what are you talking about? You know, it caught me in a compromising position." So you're clicking away, and during that point, you click on something that says, "Well, in order to see the video, you have to get this updated driver, you have to get this flash update, you have to get this whatever," right? And you go, "Fine, I want to see the video," and you click through, and basically by doing that, doesn't matter what you have for antivirus software, because you clicked on a link authorizing that installation, you bypassed it, and the code basically, snuck right past your antivirus program. So that's how they do it. That's why I wanted to focus in on this particular part of it. Is this is probably the cleverest way that we've seen these malicious authors of code trick people in the last 5-10 years. It's very clever. They refer to it as social engineering, right? So they're taking taking socially acceptable interactions, right, and engineering some malicious component to it, and that's specifically what they're doing. So hopefully, by folks hearing this. Facebook is such a great utility, and there are great ways to get information back and forth and stay in contact. But if you ever get anything, generally in your inbox, this is not something where you went to a friend's Facebook page, saw a video they posted, and said, "That's interesting, I'd like to see that," right? You got it as a message in your inbox.
I actually got it the way you just described it, was that you had to go on here and download Adobe Illustrator or something like that in order to see the video. That's what I got.
And it was very convincing, had the Adobe button, the whole thing, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, so they got you.
And I think really that's what's changed over time. I mean, things are, tricking these people has become much more convincing, whereas before it might have been a lot more obvious that this, was a scam or was, some type of virus.
So the I know there's an old song, the lyrics are something like, "Paranoia will destroy you."
Yeah.
In today's world, paranoia will save you.
Okay.
You have to question everything.
You really can never be too careful.
Exactly.
In these situations.
They are very good.
They're extremely good. Now, what you have to stop and think about is, wait a minute, I didn't have to use anything special to watch a video yesterday. Why am I suddenly having to today?
Right.
And there are times when Adobe does upgrade the Flash player. So the key is, the next time you're confronted with this, instead of assuming that it's a legitimate offer, manually go to Adobe's website, go to the Flash Player section, and make sure that you have the latest version.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Don't believe what they're saying. I'm going to put you on hold here because I know you still have the issue with the modem. That's, I'm sure, quite coincidental because KubeFace doesn't attack hardware. In fact, very few viruses actually will attack any component of the hardware, and the ones that do, they're fairly benign. So those of you that found that you had a virus and then suddenly some piece of hardware stopped working, don't make the assumption that, "Oh, I just got hit." So we got lots more show to go. We're talking about hackers. The data doctors are in the house. In force, 602-277-5827. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. I was just talking to John off the air. as a secondary piece of the discussion, his antivirus program did identify that he had six or seven different Trojans and backdoor Trojans and a keylogger and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, wow.
Folks, if you ever see the word keylogger on your antivirus software,
big red flag.
That means a piece of software that was either attempting to or was successful in tracking your keystrokes was in your computer. This means, and the reason they're doing this, and we're getting into the mentality of the hacker, the ha-ha hacker days are over. The script kiddies, the people are doing it for fun, those days are long gone. The main reason people are creating malicious code and trying to exploit your computer today is for money. And the easiest way to grab money is to grab your identity. And the computer, if you're not paying attention, the computer's an excellent way for a hacker to grab your identity from Malaysia, from Bulgaria, from all these places that they are outside. It's not somebody in your neighborhood. It's somebody on the other side of the water, because they can reach into your computer if you let them. And that's what that Kube face was all about, is try to get people infected. But if you see the word keylogger, that means something is either potentially was in your computer or tried to get in. It doesn't matter. Here's what you got to do whenever you see that. And if you're not sure what the virus is, you just know you got infected with the virus, use the same tactic. Go to another computer you know absolutely is clean. So a friend, a work computer, whatever you have to do. If you don't have a place that you know you can trust, you can stop by any of the Data Doctor's locations anywhere in the country and say, Ken said I could come in here and use one of your terminals to secure my identity. And basically what I'm telling you to do is go to those critical online accounts, your brokerage account, your online bank account, whatever it is. Change the passcode.
Your credit cards also.
Whatever you normally access online, go and change those passcodes from a secured machine.
Well, and another thing we have to look at here is Arizona is number one in the country for identity theft, with almost 10,000 victims per year. And these are statistics for 2006. I mean, this is really an issue.
Big time. And the number of ways that your identity can get stolen, the reason why Arizona is one of the tops is in addition to all the electronic means, dumpster diving and going after medical records and, just the old school way of stealing identity is very common here. People aren't paying attention to where their trash goes. And don't forget your email account. That's the gateway to stealing your identity. If somebody gets your email account, they can act like you. They can go to your bank and say, oh, I forgot my password. Please send it to me. Boom, and they got you. So don't forget your email account. That's the one that can really get you in big trouble. So, you know what, John? I know I told you you're going to be next, but Cameron's got to get to work, and I want to answer his question real quick. Cameron, you had a question about transferring old video. Is that correct?
I do. I've got a old Sony Handycam. The problem is it records in PAL format.
Yes.
I'm trying to find some way that I can convert that format into something that'll work here in the States.
Okay, so the device itself, the camcorder, you still have that, right?
Yes.
Okay. What do you want to be able to display these images on? On a television, or are you okay with just a smaller screen on a computer?
I'm fine with small on a computer.
Because there are any number of companies, and I'm drawing a blank. I even have one of these devices at home. It's a simple external box that has the standard RCA jack. So it's got the yellow for video and red and white for the two audio channels.
Mm-hmm.
So you come out of the camera with the cable that came with the camera, mm-hmm. and plug it in as if you were going to plug it into a TV.
Okay.
But you plug it into this box. This box then goes with a USB connection into your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is you load the software that comes with the box, and then you hit the play button on your camcorder, and then you capture the output, right? So instead of going through all this expensive figuring out how to decode things, you're simply taking the output from the camera and capturing it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think they're like $100.
Yeah, in fact, Pinnacle has one.
Pinnacle,
works.
Pinnacle.
I think it's about $99.
I think 80.
And if you go to pinnaclesys.com, you can mm-hmm. see that for yourself. And they also have software that allows you to edit that video once you've captured it off the camera, so that you can make a nice little family movie out of it.
And I just found the one that I use. It's called Video Express. It's from a company called ADS.
Mm-hmm.
So adstech.com.
Okay.
It's called a Video Express. Now, it's not the highest quality in the world. It's not, if you tried to watch it on a TV, you'd be, it's not like the original video,
mm-hmm.
because it's being compressed and it's going into a computer. But if you only care about watching it on the computer, then it's not bad.
Okay.
And it's
next question I would have then, is the software all Mac compatible?
In Pinnacle's case, yes, they do have software that is made specifically for the Mac, and you either could use that, or you can also use the built-in iMovie application on your Mac to edit that video as well.
Yeah, okay. editing becomes possible once you get it into the computer. The Video Express is only for Windows. So in the Rube Goldberg world of solutions, right now you need to load Windows onto your Mac just so you can do this. I'm kidding. Don't do it. Go with the Pinnacle product.
Yeah, I think I should.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. All right, thanks, Cameron. Thanks for calling in. And it is quite effective. In fact, you can with the Video Express for your Windows users. It actually can capture it for Game Boys and all different types of video formats there. So it's pretty cool. All right, now back to John. John, I apologize. Cameron said he had to get to work, and I hope you're not in the same situation. You also have
no problem.
You also have a question that I wanted to be able to spend ample time on because this is a very common question, very common set of issues, and I want to spend some good quality time with you.
Sure. By the way, I have a quick tip for avoiding some of these viruses masquerading as media player upgrades and such, and that is, just save the installer as a file rather than run it, and then just check it with one's antivirus software. That often is a good way to trap that stuff. And also, when getting an authorization box, don't click OK or cancel. Click the red X instead, because maybe those are relabeled so they're both OK or something.
Both excellent pieces of advice. Just to review, instead of letting something run, save the file. Now, John, the bad guys have actually figured out that people are going to try to do that, so they actually don't even give you the option to save it.
Don't use it.
Exactly. But it is great. Even if you think it's legitimate, that's a great piece of advice. Download it, save it to some component or some folder on your hard drive, then run a manual scan of that with your antivirus to make absolutely sure. Or if you're thinking this is a hoax, always upper right-hand corner, and make sure it's the upper right-hand corner, because they put a red X inside of the red X, hoping you'll click on the wrong one a lot of times. Okay, so you have a Vista machine. In fact, it's not your ordinary kind of Vista machine, is it?
No, it's a tablet PC, very handy for us future engineers who are taking engineering classes, and as soon as the professor starts to draw something, we're otherwise dead in the water if we're using just a keyboard to take notes.
So just for people that have never seen a tablet PC, what's it look like?
It looks like a regular laptop, except you can grab the screen and give it a good hard twist and turn it around and fold it flat, just as you can with any machine, except you can do it to this one more than one time. And you have a stylus, which acts like a pen, and you can just go ahead and take handwritten notes and such right into a document, such as something in
Word or Excel or anything.
In Word, or actually OneNote for tablets.
Yeah. Now, and I did catch your attempt at humor there.
Yeah. Some people out there, of course, I disavow any liability for those who actually do try to turn their screens around on those that are not designed for it.
Those are the people that will do it one time. You actually have what's called, because a true tablet PC has no keyboard, physical keyboard. You have
that would be a slate.
Well, you have a convertible.
Isn't a tablet a convertible? In fact, a tablet and a slate is one without a keyboard.
No, actually, semantics, you call it whatever you want. Oh. The fact that you can use it as a traditional laptop, and then it can convert into a tablet PC in a traditional sense. Anyway, regardless, because that's actually, to me, the best way to go. If you want the tablet format, because Microsoft actually creates a tablet PC version of Windows, and that's for any of these kinds of screens. And now with Windows 7, they're going to be supporting a bunch of new screens and touch devices and all kinds of things. But the fact that you can twist that thing around and then flatten it down like a tablet, as opposed to like Fujitsu makes pure tablet PCs where it's just the tablet. And if you want a keyboard, you got to hit a button and a fake keyboard comes up on the screen, that kind of thing. So you have this. Now, the reason I want to bring that up is that means you have a little extra overhead. There are extra processes that have to run in Windows in order for this thing to be able to react to the things you want to do. So you're going to have more processes than normal. But typically, these convertibles and these tablet PCs have a stronger processor to be able to handle some of that stuff.
Right. I have an Intel Core 2 Duo
processor, T7500 2.2 gigahertz.
And so you have
belt RAM to 4 gigs.
Yeah, you got all this. You got all this stuff. You know, I got everything. It's like NASCAR,
yeah.
Right? I got the you know, the blower and the injector. The problem is this thing's running like a slug.
Yep.
Now, when did this start?
Hard to recall for sure. It seems like it's been going. I've had the thing a couple of years, and it's probably been a year that it's been acting up like this.
Okay,
not that it's just a sluggish internet related thing. If I just try to click between applications that are already running and have nothing to do with internet connections,
right?
I'll
click
and it'll just say not responding, and it'll pause and gray out, and then finally move over.
And I'm assuming when you first got it, this thing was lickety split and wonderful and everything, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, or
okay.
At least I had not yet noticed this flaw, but I suspect that it's just that it's grown.
Oh, I suspect that you would be calling somebody really fast if you were getting not responding when you first bought the thing.
Right.
So here's the deal. Over time, as you go about your computing business, you've allowed things to change in the operating system of the tablet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? These changes are what's causing the symptoms today. Okay? One of the quickest ways to observe that is to from a fresh, clean reboot, right, just a fresh restart, go into the task manager and find out how many processes are running. And you can do that. You can either do that by right-clicking on the taskbar, those of you that don't know how to do this, or just the three-fingered salute generally would give you access to the task manager, Control-Alt-Delete.
83 processes.
Okay. So with a tablet, I'd be okay with about 45. Maybe 40.
Yeah, 50 max.
48, 50 max, right? So if I own that, I would service it with the things that I know to get those extra 30, 35 processes out of there because they're not real likely to be necessary. And so it's everything from those minute little programs where you go, you know, next, I agree, you know, and go with the recommended, you know, complete install, whatever. Everything from your printer, what kind of printer do you have?
An all-in-one, but I actually, since it's a machine I inherited and it didn't come with a disc for Vista, I used a Vista driver, and it's an HP all-in-one scanner, fax,
okay.
Et
cetera, all right,
I use it as just a printer.
All right, hang on, John, because that's another one of those. I could have almost predicted that's what you were going to answer with, but hang tight here. We're going to answer more of that. Stay tuned. Those of you having sluggish, I don't care if it's Vista, Windows XP, John's experience is what yours is. Stay tuned. We got lots more coming.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We're talking about hackers, crackers,
what else,
slackers, shellackers. No, everything. We're just trying to, actually we've been solving more problems than talking about hackers.
Yeah, I can't say we've really touched
haven't
on
really,
that subject
no.
too much.
But we do have quite a few links and resources for you if you really want to take a deep dive into the mentality of the world of the hacker. We're going to talk some more about it here in a minute, but trying to give you an idea what's behind that whole curtain there and the hacker and why they're doing it and, you know, how they get started and all that stuff we're going to talk about in a second. Before we get to that, we have to get to one of the most important segments of the show. Every week we try to bring you some small piece of the vernacular of the tech world so that when you hear this term, you'll know what it means. Or if you want to sound, once again, like a smarty pants at a cocktail party, you can use the word and watch to see if everyone's eyes go, what does that mean?
And drum roll, please.
So in the vein of today's topic, the Geek Speak of the Week is sneaker. And we're not talking about what you wear on your feet. Although I suppose there's a variation, secondary Geek Speak I'll talk about after this. But a sneaker in the context that we're talking about is an individual that's actually hired to break into places in order to test the security. Sneakers have been around way before technology and computers. You know, people were hired to try to sneak into government labs and that kind of thing. And, you know, there are people that are doing that now with the TSA, right? Trying to get through the airport security, and they're hired to do just that, see if they can get through and expose any holes. So there are many, many sneaker services now for businesses out there that want to know where they might be vulnerable from a technology standpoint. So you can actually hire somebody to try to hack into your corporate website, hack into your corporate network, those kinds of things, just to figure out, okay, I don't know anything about your business, but I want to get into it, so I'm going to see if I can. Are there any open doors? And one of the things that that hackers and sneakers and all these guys focus in on are the what are called known vulnerabilities, okay? I don't know if you remember way back, the garage door opener vulnerability, where the garage door opener manufacturers were creating like a half a dozen codes for their garage door openers, right?
You just drive around the neighborhood and
hold your button down.
Keep clicking, and eventually you'll hit on one.
Exactly. So that's why all the sophistication in garage door openers changed to where you have these buttons and codes, and it's more trouble to get it set up, but once it is, it's more secure.
So now there is about, what, 25 codes instead of...
Oh, it's, I think it's some power to, you know, it's basically large enough. It's not infinite, but it's large enough that the, you know, again, I suppose if you drove around with your garage door opener, you might be able to, you know, find out. So in the real world, that physically takes too much time, right, to go poking around 10,000 houses and pressing the button. In the computer world, a hacker can say, there's a known vulnerability in the Windows operating system, and it looks like this. So they write a piece of software that says, just go start probing every single machine you can find on the internet to see if this particular door is open. And they're electronically trying the garage door opener scam, right, on your computer.
And it's much, much faster than driving around the neighborhood.
And there's no human involved. It's just a piece of code that they write that just goes out there and looks for machines that are doing that. So when you hear terms like firewall or router, and you hear us saying you if you have a high-speed internet, you got to have some form of hardware firewall or a router or something in there to put a veil between you and the folks on the internet. That's why. If you don't have that, if you don't have a firewall, if you don't have a router, your physical machine is actually accessible to anybody on the internet. And all they have these automated probes. It's almost like war games, right? They just go around the internet looking for people that have what they call publicly addressable public IP addresses. They can get into your machine. And all they're going to do is they're going to go up to your machine, they're going to hit the button, and if your garage door opens,
they're in.
And that's all they're doing. And so firewalls, what they do is they create this veil. They actually create this block between the outside world and, in the case of your home network, a broadband router has a firewall component in it, so that all the machines that are on it are behind the firewall and invisible to those people that are probing. So they're going to walk up to your computer or what looks like your IP address at your house. They're going to press the button. Nothing's going to happen because there's no computers to talk to. It's talking to your router, and your router's not going to respond like a computer would. Whereas if it's just your computer and you're directly connected. So those of you that have a high-speed internet connection and you plug directly into like a cable modem and you don't have a router or anything else, you're in the highest risk group. And depending upon what you have for antivirus and software firewalls and that kind of thing, literally people can walk up to your machine and install stuff on it. And because they're going to exploit these back doors and things that are known.
Not to mention, I mean, if you have a wireless network in addition to that, I mean, anybody can just drive right by, connect to it.
Same kind of
wireless network. It's same concept there.
They call it war driving. It's like war games, right? They're just looking for an open connection. So these are simple exploits that they can simply expose, or excuse me, their vulnerabilities that they can exploit. And that's why when we talk about patching, it's somebody figured out here's a new back door. If you jiggle that Arcadia door in this way, it'll open. Okay, well, now that you know about it, you need to put a lock on there so that they can't use that exploit to open that particular Arcadia door. I guess Arcadia doors are foreign to people outside of Phoenix. Huh? Do you know what I'm talking about when
no,
I say
I don't.
Arcadia? It's a sliding glass door.
Oh.
to keep that heat out, you know,
yeah.
keep the heat in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they call it different things in different markets, but that's the mentality. So the hacking world is broken up into three main groups. You have what are called the black hat hackers. Those are the bad guys, and their intent is purely malicious, and they have no purpose but to exploit people.
Hence the color black, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay.
Then you have the white hat hackers, which are folks that are specifically out there so that when they find a problem, they hack through the operating system, they hack through Windows, and then they notify Microsoft, I found a hole. They don't tell the whole world. They don't tell their hacker buddies. They tell the company that has the product, or they sell the information, right? There's lots of businesses doing that now. And then there's this group that they call the gray hat hackers. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's kind of a gray area.
Just everything in between.
And let me give you an example of why people go from white hat hackers to gray. If a white hat hacker says, I found an exploit, reports it to Microsoft, let's say, and Microsoft chooses to ignore it, they then feel compelled to tell the world, to force Microsoft. They're going to now expose this vulnerability to the whole world so that in an effort, in their minds, they're saying that's going to force Microsoft. Once it's public knowledge, it's going to force Microsoft to deal with this issue. And you see that discussion on the internet all the time. And so people that that are white hat hackers will use that gray hat kind of mentality to try to force the situation. Or more often, the black hat hackers will try to pose as a gray hat, right? Saying, oh no, I did this to try to, you know, it's just cover. The reason that they're doing it, no one knows other than that person that has their motives for doing it. But it's the same set of rules that's out there, the revenge of the nerds kind of thing, those people that were mistreated in the social circles and now they have this way of having power over those. That's at the root of a lot of this stuff. So when we come back, we're going to talk some more about that. Obviously, Dave, Ramon, Jim, Bruce, Theta, please hang tight. We'll either handle you on the air or off the air. It is the Computer Corner. The Data Doctor's in the house. Back right after this. You're listening to the Computer Corner with the Data Doctor's. Every Saturday afternoon, we come in and have some fun, talk some tech, eat some Japanese food, drink some green tea.
Pretty chicken much and rice, you know?
Yeah, good stuff. Teriyaki. Try to educate you a little bit on what's going on in the world of technology. We thank you for joining us. We actually have a specific question. Clay came in. Clayton from the head of our data recovery lab, forensics, came in to answer any specific questions about lost data and crashed hard drives. And Jim!
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
You actually have a situation, don't you? We call it, we refer to it as consternation.
Maybe you could tell me a little bit about what's happening there.
Well, I got a Dell laptop, about 3 years old, and it's been heating up lately. I've been using it on my bed, you know, and
careful, Jim. We don't need to know too much about that.
Right, but a week ago, I got a little system message. I forget exactly what it was. Something to the effect that my there was imminent failure with my hard drive.
Imminent failure with your hard drive. Okay.
Yeah.
And imminent was how long?
Well, it's from what I read, it said most hard drives don't fail completely at once. They go out over time. But just to be on the safe side, I plugged in a backup, and I started backing up my crucial files.
And?
That was very smart.
And I got some of them, but then I got a blue screen.
The BSOD.
Mm. That's right.
Blue screen of death.
Yes. Only it wasn't your typical system failure that you can reboot and
It was the everyone out of the pool BSOD.
That's right.
Well, I mean, your situation, Jim, is something that we see actually quite often. In fact, how you describe the drive failing in a degrading way is very true. It can fail, you know, right after purchasing the drive, or it can fail over a long period of time.
Uh-huh.
And that degrading physical condition is probably why you were able to get some of those files off before that blue screen came up. Now, there's still probably a very good chance of recovery of the remainder of those files. excluding any type of catastrophic failure that the drive may have suffered. Do you know when the computer boots up? Is the drive still being recognized, or you know, in that boot screen, does it come up?
Yeah, I tried a lot of recovery processes. You know,
No, Jim, just follow along.
Yeah.
He's going to ask you some questions because he's going to be able to tell you what you can do next based on how you answer the questions.
Okay.
So, is the drive recognized
when you're booting up? When you first turn it on, it'll go through a boot process before that blue screen hits.
No, it takes me.
Does it go directly there?
Right. It takes me to a screen. It says try again, and it just goes back and forth.
Is it like a disk boot failure, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, ultimately what we'd want to, you said this was a notebook, correct?
A laptop.
Laptop, yes. Okay. What we'd want to do is, you know, get that into our data recovery lab, remove the drive from the laptop, and then we would evaluate it, you know, in a clean room environment, make sure that, you know, all the processes and procedures are followed, you know, to a T to make sure that no additional data is possibly lost. And that's really what we're concerned about here, is that data.
Yeah, so you got a couple of choices, basically, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
If you want to try to do it yourself, first thing you want to do is say, how important is this data to me? You know, because if it's not that important, then all the do-it-yourself stuff that's out there, we can give you all kinds of stuff, and you know, we're not going to take any responsibility for the results.
Right.
If the information's critical, and you got, because a lot of times you got one shot at it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
In this scenario where you literally have some kind of physical problem with the drive, we don't know what it is.
Right.
And the next time you turn it on, it could be the last time.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Or the times that you've tried to reboot it already. Could have reduced the chances of data recovery because we don't know how many more times before it's just going to go to that next level of failure.
Right.
So the first question you have to answer yourself is how important is this? Is it worth paying? Because professional data recovery is very expensive.
Right.
It can easily get into the thousands of dollars depending upon how catastrophic the failure is.
Yeah.
So if that's not an option, then if you're looking for do-it-yourself advice, you can try to remove that hard drive, put it into an enclosure or some other, connect it to another computer, and see if the drive is accessible from another computer so that, you know, maybe some small chance that the Windows operating system got corrupted. So you can't boot to it anymore, you can't run it anymore, but the raw files are still accessible.
And what Ken's saying is, you know, absolutely correct. It could be that the operating system is what was slowing down the rate of transfer, and now that operating system issue is what's, you know, got you into this blue screen situation.
Oh. Yeah, the chances of it being that are real slim just based on what you describe to us.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are the kinds of things that you can try doing. Much more than that, I mean, these recovery software tools only work if the drive is functioning properly, and
yes,
it's not. So that's, none of those are going to work. Those cheap programs that say, "Oh, we can recover your data," that's predicated on the machine actually working properly. So hang tight there. We're going to let Jim and Clay talk some more off the air, just so we can get some more information. We got another half an hour to go. We're going to talk a little more about hackers. You want to call in and vent about them? Go ahead. You want to email and vent about them? Go ahead. You want to Twitter and vent about them? Go ahead. We'll take it any way you want it. 602-277-5827. The Data Doctors will be back right after this. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We've kind of talked about everything under the sun this week, haven't we?
Yeah, just about.
It's a good thing. Rich, say something. Your wife's listening, isn't she?
I believe she is.
Well, why don't you say hello to her at least?
Hello, Barbara. I love you.
I'm sure she does too. No.
Rich hasn't been around me long enough to realize you got to butt your way into this conversation or you're going
to
be sitting there.
Well, it's difficult to do with Ken, I'll have to admit that.
Well, he's not giving any bad answers, so.
This is true. This is true. Good advice.
I'm a twaka. We got an email here. Jimmy says, transferring from my old to new laptop. I'm in the process of purchasing a new laptop. Question, what is the best and most reliable software to transfer all files, pictures, software, from my old to my from my old laptop to my new laptop? Thanks for the help. Well, Jimmy, you will find no shortage of companies that claim that they can get that stuff transferred over, but unless you're doing a Mac-to-Mac transfer, I wouldn't believe it.
Yes, I mean, you're absolutely correct there. I mean, getting all those old programs over to the new system, having them work, that's just not going to happen, period.
Well, no. There's a bunch of companies out there that make it sound like you buy this program, mm-hmm. you install the cable, You load the software, you click some buttons, and it just transfers everything over. And we thought this is wonderful when the software came out, because we've been testing this stuff for years, thinking, we're just hoping one of these guys can actually make it happen.
Right.
The problem, Jimmy, and anybody else out there that's thinking that this might be a good solution, computers are so complicated, and no two are the same. So these software programs have to make educated guesses about what should come over and what shouldn't. And little things like the version of the printer program that you're using that has this new quirk that wasn't around when the software was created. So when I used the software, because I thought this is great, I don't have to go through this rebuild on my new machine. My printer, I went through 2 weeks of hell trying to get my printer to work consistently. The files came over, but so did a bunch of other crap and a bunch of stuff that required, I spent more time undoing all the mess that was created by these programs than it would have if I'd have just done it manually. So I guess the bearer of bad news, Jimmy, if you're looking for a suggestion from us, a referral to a piece of software that's going to make all this happen, unless you have two Macs, I don't have one for you, because the Mac operating system does a pretty good job.
And they better be similar versions
of the Mac, or you're talking
about the Mac?
Yeah, no, I, obviously you're gonna have to be fairly close there. So, unfortunately, getting a machine, whether you're reinstalling, starting over, transferring, buying a new machine, the biggest thing that's overlooked on a new computer is getting the new computer to look like the old computer,
and that can take some time.
Oh, it will take you a lot of time, especially if you didn't think about it before you made the purchase of the new computer.
Yes, yes.
Because now you're either going to have to spend more money paying somebody to do it professionally, or you're going to struggle through this thing for weeks trying to get this all set up, and how did I have my printer set up, and where does those disks go, and what, all that. It's not an easy thing to do, so... speaking of reformatting, Bruce, you typically have had good success reformatting your Dell, but this last time around, not so much, huh?
You're exactly right.
So how many times have you done the restore CD from Dell?
Well, I've done the restore CD like four times, but I actually go through and F-disk reformat,
you're wiping it off, right? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And this time around, did the same thing, put everything back on, put all my drivers on, went and got all of the
updates
from Windows and all of that good stuff. So I'm all up to date on all of that stuff, but the computer is running really slow. It's got like 33 processes going, but...
The process is probably in the issue. Just for folks that are out there contemplating reinstalling, by the way, earlier on the show, we were talking to the gentleman on the Toshiba or Hitachi tablet convertible?
I believe Fujitsu
or whatever.
I forget.
Whatever it was.
So many of them.
One of the things we didn't talk about on the air, we talked about it off the air, was the other option you have when you have this is do what Bruce did, which is wipe everything out. But in his case, it was the same issue of where are my disks and how long to take. From start to finish, realistically, Bruce, you put the disk in, you did your F-disk. How long did it take you to get from that point to the point where you actually had a machine you could use?
With all of the updated...
Yeah, everything. All that you had to do to get it... 8 hours and 45 minutes.
Yep.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't it a 20-minute deal? You just stick the disc in and you're done?
Yeah, I wish.
Something is wrong.
The reason I'm bringing this up is, folks, reloading Windows is not a quick and dirty task. So when you ask a professional organization to reload Windows and they tell you it's going to take a lot of time and some real money, it's because...
8 hours.
It takes a lot of time.
If to do it properly, obviously, Bruce, you know how to do it properly because you are going through and getting all those updates. You're checking the Dell website. You're checking which service packs are out there and so on and so forth. Let me ask you now, the slow performance, was it something you noticed right away after you did the reload, or did it happen to kind of creep in there?
The first time I booted it up and went in there, I mean, it was immediate.
It was immediate. So this time around, something didn't take. How old is this piece of hardware?
It's an 8200, probably 4 years old, 5 years old maybe.
I mean, there's a small possibility you do have a hardware issue. If I had to take a guess, I'd say the most likely suspect would be the hard drive.
I've actually installed a hard drive, and Bellark said it's a healthy hard drive. Our hard drive's maybe a year old.
Okay, so it's not a 4 or 5 year old hard drive.
No. Okay. And I'm thinking it might even be the memory. Though I tried to download a couple of the different programs that Microsoft offers to check memory, and I can't get those downloaded correctly to even try to do a burn-in and see if this works.
I will tell you, as somebody that does this professionally for 20 years, the programs that you download and check your memory, they're not really going to tell you anything.
Okay.
Yeah, you really need good, solid memory testing equipment to get a really good understanding of what's going on there. But it does sound like during the installation this time, mm-hmm. it ran into some piece of hardware that caused the Windows operating system to be installed improperly. Like you have some corruption in the OS.
Okay.
And that's why you have this immediate slowdown.
Okay. How much memory do you have?
256 megs of RDRAM, which is, I don't understand, but really expensive if you want to upgrade even now.
Yeah, well, it's expensive because nobody has it anymore.
Apparently. I need to go find some use somewhere.
Supply and demand. Yeah, Craigslist, eBay, all those. Yeah.
Yep. Because I just uploaded got 2 gigs for my laptop and 2 gigs for my other home Dell computer.
Yeah,
it was like $19.
Yeah, it was $249.50 for today's memory.
$1.99.
Now the machine, though, before you wiped it out, was working fine from a performance standpoint.
Other than the fact that it had so much viral stuff going
right.
on that it wasn't worth my time to try to...
Right, but the performance issue you're experiencing now was not occurring.
Exactly.
So the amount of hard drive or the amount of memory and those kinds of things, it certainly would help. I wouldn't think... go ahead.
Yeah, I think you should open up the Task Manager.
It's open right now.
And go to the Performance tab.
Yep.
And what is the memory usage in the lower left-hand box under memory?
Commit charge?
Actually, you should have
the
CPU
graphics.
Usage, the graphics, the graphic.
Okay, well, I had this on while I was waiting for you guys to come on, and the CPU usage history would go anywhere from 0 to 70 to 100 back to 0, and there, as far as applications, the one that's... page file?
The little pictures in the performance tab. You got two sets of pictures there. One that shows CPU usage, and one that basically is
page file, which is usage. That's the memory, I would assume. Correct.
Correct.
The memory.
Yeah, the page file usage.
It's at 263 megabytes.
And you only have
256.
Yeah.
So it's basically maxed out.
That's what it's saying to me. It doesn't show that it's at the top of the graph, but it's showing 263 in the bottom, unless that's what it's showing is available.
Right. That's the amount of memory your CPU is using. Just to run,
okay.
And you don't have enough memory in that PC. And what happens is it starts to use your hard drive to
swap
pages,
yeah,
and
exactly.
That slows you down significantly.
Okay, so what's my choice here?
Well, the question is why all of a sudden it's doing it now. The 256 meg of memory in today's Windows world is certainly on the low end. So, the problem is you can't just go around the corner and get cheap memory to slap this thing in there. So, you know, why it's, again, this is the problem doing this over the air without physically seeing your equipment. There may be another thing that if we were sitting there, we'd go, this is obviously an issue. But the fact that you reloaded and after the reload, you're getting this really bad performance. Something went wrong during the reload process.
Okay.
And since there's 8.5 hours worth of potential things that could have been, it's probably something, you know, base, because you said as soon as you rebooted after the wipeout, you notice the performance issue.
Well, and, you know, I really still would not count out the fact that it isn't the hard drive. I mean, it's 1 year old, but we see hard drives that fail, 6 months.
Yeah,
you know, one
out of
month.
The box.
And,
I can change out the hard drive, and I never even thought about that, but I have a spare hard drive and another computer I could just throw in there.
Well, and if it's not, I mean, it sounds like you're pretty handy with this stuff, so if it's not, you know, if you're okay doing that, then do so, because the initial wiping it out and letting Dell's restore disk do its thing,
mm-hmm.
that's a fire and forget kind of thing, right? All the other work comes afterwards.
Sure, exactly.
But you said that as soon as you did that and came after that first reboot, you noticed that it was slow. So if you do this with another hard drive and you notice it's still slow, then you've eliminated the hard drive.
Exactly.
So now you can start diagnosing some of the other issues.
There you go.
It's time or money, my friend.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's all fun. You'll learn about all of this stuff.
Those are the two options with every computer problem on the planet: time or money.
Yeah, and and it's all pretty logical stuff, right?
Well, that's like talking about common sense. It ain't so common.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's turned on. Yes, no.
I'm not sure how logical logic is these days either. All right, Bruce. Hey, good luck with that.
Hey, thanks
and
for your help.
If you come up with a big major aha, shoot us an email or give us a call back next week.
Definitely. Thanks for being on the air and doing this for people.
No problem, Bruce. Appreciate it.
All righty. Have a good weekend.
And that's why we do it. Try to help people on the weekend, and then we go and have fun ourselves. Theta, we're going to get you right after this break. It is the Data Doctors. Stay tuned for a little more of the Computer Corner. So if you are a newsletter subscriber, you'll notice this week's edition has a lot of almost advanced and expert type of tips in there. But they're not designed for advanced and expert users. They're designed to help those that have never thought about using some of these advanced and expert tools to use them for iTunes, for YouTube. There's a great little link to a story about a resource for, you know, the scroll wheel on your mouse.
Mm-hmm.
You notice in order for the scroll to work, you have to click on the active window. Kind of a pain. It sounds like a minor thing, but it's kind of a major pain, right?
I'm sure if you add up all the time, you know, over the course of a year and doing that.
Think of carpal tunnel.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Those extra clicks. Well, the link for this week's Headwhack of the Week is to a piece of software that just automatically identifies the window through focus. Wherever the mouse is.
You're hovering over it and it
just
automatically
yeah. And the author of this article said, I hope you're listening, Microsoft, for Windows 7. But there's a link to that. If you're a MacBook user, there's a link to a story about a security issue that there's a default setting in there that might allow people through Bluetooth to do things with your MacBook that you don't want to have happen. And so what to do about that is in that particular story. If you're a Trekkie, we've got a link to a story about Treknology, kind of where, you know, in 66, Roddenberry had all these ideas of communicator. Odd how a lot of those things are kind of what we're using these days, huh?
It's amazing how things have changed.
Beam me up. If you're one of those looking at one of the Kindles or looking at the Kindle with some level of interest, there's a rumor that Apple's going to come out with what's called an iPad, and there's an opinion column in there on why the iPad is likely going to kill the Kindle and maybe some of the magazine companies. My weekly advice column is one I think is going to have tremendous impact on a lot of people. It's syncing your bookmarks across multiple browsers and across multiple machines and even across multiple platforms. So wouldn't it be nice that if you created a favorite in Internet Explorer at the office, because you have to use Internet Explorer at the office, and then when you got home and opened up Firefox, the browser favorites were updated with whatever you just did at the office. Uh-huh. How about being on vacation and being able to access all your favorites?
Now, does that work with Safari and Chrome as well?
Not Chrome, because Chrome's not considered a real browser.
Not in the top three. There.
Safari, Firefox, Internet Explorer across multiple platforms. Safari on the Mac.
And multiple computers?
Multiple computers, multiple platforms. Basically, just you install an add-on to each browser that basically goes and phones home and checks your primary account. If you think it through, it's really not that difficult of a process, but it's a brilliant service, and it's free! This week's advice column, yeah. And then, of course, the CNN video that I did last Wednesday, I do them live at Wednesday at 5:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific now, and try to find either something that's in the newsletter or something that's going on in the world that I think is interesting. And we're still working through the new production staff getting the Skype connection going, but Theta was on. She was on earlier asking about OpenOffice. OpenOffice being the open source version of Microsoft Office, word processing, spreadsheet, and all that. Very, very similar. Has interoperability for the most part with Word documents. And so Theta said, I have an Office 2003. I'm just wondering, should I migrate to OpenOffice or what should I do? Theta, here's the key component. If you don't need to interact with others, if every document you're ever going to create is only going to be used on that one machine, then you should have no problems whatsoever with OpenOffice. If you do some minor exchange of documents with others, you probably still aren't going to have that big of an issue with OpenOffice. If you're heavily into document exchange, and not just Word, PowerPoint, a lot of these other things, then the little things that tend to not work when they go back and forth, in a casual user sense, is no big deal. For a hardcore user, it's kind of a pain. There's no reason you have to upgrade Office 2003. If it ain't broke,
use it.
Don't fix it. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, if you haven't, it's working, Theta. Sorry you hung up. Just keep using Office 2003. And, you know, don't change unless you really have a reason to change. In that case, I wouldn't upgrade because there's no reason to. And again, unless you are. And those of you using Office 2003, you get these new DOCSIS, D-O-C-X.
Just going to mention that.
Right?
Yeah, that was awfully annoying before I upgraded that in 07.
In the brilliant minds over at Microsoft, they said, we're going to come out with this new version of Microsoft Office, and we're going to change the file format for most of the programs because we can do more with this new format.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about all those people that have the old versions. They're not going to be able to read the documents, right? Well, you can. You can get a free converter. And just type in Google Doc to DOCSIS. So DOC space TO space DOCX.
One other
converter.
Point on OpenOffice, not to step on you, but it does not have Outlook.
No. No,
so there's no production form of Outlook on
no
there.
No email there.
No
and
email.
I didn't get the sense that Theta was... She was probably more of an Outlook Express or Microsoft
probably,
Mail
yeah,
type
right,
user, but
it is something to know when you're looking at
critically
it.
Critically important, especially for businesses that are thinking about migrating. You better make sure you have a good email client to make up for that. Rich, appreciate you coming in.
Yes.
Yeah,
you're welcome. Thank you.
Get the reward for coming the longest distance from Wayzata, our store out
okay.
there. Number one in the country last year.
Yep.
All right. Still doing it this year, too, looks like.
Yep. Still up there.
Clay from our Data Recovery Labs.
Great to be here, Ken, and I'm sure I'll be back sooner than you think.
Come on down. It is the Computer Corner of the Data Doctor. See you next week.